Hello, it's Larry Clark from Excelsior Music Publishing, and welcome to another episode of From the Composer. Today, I'll be talking to composer Peter Terry. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, we're looking forward to talking to you today. And could you start out by giving us a brief background of, you know, what you've done in composition and sort of your backstory of how you've gotten where you are?
Okay. When I was very young, I was one of these fairly strange kids, I think, that I figured when I was in grade school that, you know, in art class, you learn how to make art. And in English class, you learned how to write stories. So I was very excited about going to band at the time because I figured I'd be learning how to write music. And of course, found out fairly quickly that wasn't going to happen in band. But I wrote my first piece when I was about 10 for probably the greatest possible reason, which was I was trying to impress a young lady. And I found out that there's not a lot of, you know, clout to writing music at that level. But I wrote a little piece, which kind of cracks me up now, but it was a trumpet solo, since I was playing trumpet. It was a trumpet solo, but I called it duet for clarinet and trumpet because this young lady played clarinet in the band. My music teacher at the time in general music took it very seriously, actually, and harmonized it for me. I just wrote the melody. I didn't know what I was doing at all. I wrote this melody, and she harmonized it. And I remember when she played it, you know, she played it for the class, I went, wow, that sounds like a hymn. That's not what I was thinking at all. So I decided that I really needed to learn something about harmony and do that myself.
Right.
So I went to the library and found, I can't remember which book it was, but one of the big books at the time on theory, and and kind of read that through and started working with that. I always seem to have attracted educators' attention who took me seriously. So I was very fortunate in that. I was in a good program in a very small school outside of Flint, Michigan. And, you know, my band directors and my trumpet teacher all took me very, very seriously. So I studied composition with Bob Longfield, who's my high school band director, who's gone on to do wonderful things.
Of course.
And I just always seemed to be able to have people take me really seriously, which was nice. So I started writing for church. I wrote some vocal music, which was fairly horrible. And, you know, as it might be, I started a rock and roll band. I was in the jazz band, and I took that a long ways on trumpet and guitar. I started working on guitar. So I always had bands to play with those things. About my junior year in high school, my band director asked me to start arranging for the marching band. So I was, you know, I had to deal with deadlines and doing things to a certain way. And then they generated the parts, which was really cool. And so I did charts for about a year and a half there, which is very, very cool. Just every week to have your stuff done. I never thought much of it. I thought this is just kind of the way it happens when you're interested.
You're a kid,
in
you don't
this.
Know. Yeah.
I mean, I had no idea how unusual that was. I did a couple charts for the jazz band that we took to festival, you know, jazz festivals that were graded and that sort of thing. And so I tried to, you know, write as much as I possibly could. And I had pages and pages and pages of incomplete things. Cause like most young composers, I didn't know how to finish anything.
Right.
So I was really fortunate that by the time I got out of high school, I had a lot of exposure. I had successes and a lot of failures already, which was nice. When I went to University of Michigan as a music ed at first, then I switched to this sort of winds major, and then I finally switched just to trumpet performance. But I took all the composition classes I could get my hands on. And again, the people at Michigan, I was not a composition major, but they allowed me to take, I took everything I possibly could in the composition curriculum.
Right.
And then went to master's at Bowling Green, where I got introduced to electronic music. and started doing a lot of work with circuit design, which was pretty outside stuff, but it was kind of cool because it taught me a lot of what's really happening with technology. And breadboarded a lot of early synths and stuff like that. Got very into that and started teaching. I was a grad assistant there in the electronic music studio for 2 years. Went to University of Texas at Austin for my doctorate and decided to just do composition and leave the trumpet behind, which was fine by then. And I did write some band music when I was there, which is really interesting. I worked with Tom Lee, who is the band director. Yeah. I did two pieces for him, which were like, you know, grade nine and very, very, very tough pieces and very dissonant and, you know, very much in the style of, you know, that, that sort of not 12 tone, kind of post 12 tone technique. And he was pushing me to send them to everybody. So I learned a lot about failure because I sent them to like everybody in the world. And, and you know, there's no interest whatsoever. So I kind of just quit doing the band stuff. But then Kent Kennan, who Kent wanted to, had retired at Texas when I first got there, but he had a big scholarship he gave to a group of theorists and composers. And there were five or six of us, and he didn't want to quit teaching. So, you know, we got this call from Kent Kennan saying, I'm having a little group over at my house to study theory privately. Would you be interested? I said, yeah, I think. So we spent, you know, about a year going over to his house a couple times a week and just really getting kicked around with theory.
Well, as a trumpet player, you probably played the Kent Kennan Sonata.
A few times. Absolutely. And of course, if you told him that, he would. I actually did it on my senior recital at Michigan. And I did it for my audition, actually, at Michigan in high school. So I told him that, and he was kind of like, oh, God, not that piece. He was so sick of that piece at that point. But, it, you know, he was very gracious. And when I was at Texas, it was kind of interesting, though, because I was getting very serious into computer music, so I did that.
So talk to me a little bit about you've obviously had some success in the last 4 or 5 years in music for concert band and orchestra for schools. Talk to me about the process of that taking place.
Well, I had a number of friends who were music education majors, both from Michigan and actually everywhere. I tended to hang with the wind players a lot in college. And I played in the Austin concert band just to keep my chops up. So that was all music educators. And everybody was always saying, oh, you need to write some band music. You need to write some band music. So I did write, tried to write a couple arrangements for young band when I was at Texas that were not hugely successful because they were way, way, way too hard. I was kind of resistant for a long time. I got hired at Cal State Los Angeles. So I was developing a computer music program there in a studio. I had a colleague who really, really, even though I did both acoustic and electronic, really wanted me to focus on just that so that he would be the acoustic guy. So I kind of allowed that to happen more than it probably should have. So for about 7 years, I didn't really do much with acoustic music at all. Right. I think what did it really was my father was a huge influence. He listened to everything, and he was a visual artist. He was a professional photographer who had gone back into administration in a bank in Flint to make a living, kind of his day job. We always had a dark room in the basement. So I got a lot of that visual attitude, and for a long time I thought I might do that, but I went with music.
Right.
And when he died, I think I went through a real sort of, I would say crisis sounds really dramatic, but it was more, I couldn't really figure out why I was writing what I was writing anymore.
Right.
I had come out of this rock and roll tradition. I gotten very heavy into the avant-garde thing, the computer music, and I was getting tired of performances at international festivals where there were like five non-composers sitting in the audience. We all sit around in the dark and drink coffee and listen to each other's, you know, pieces for 2 hours. So I was teaching in Interlaken in the summers, computer music, and all my friends are band directors, my neighbors on both sides down on the lake. And they kept bugging me. Friends kept bugging me. You really need to get into band. You really need to get into band. And I said, well, you know, maybe. And for about 3 years, I kept saying, yeah, I'll do that. I got introduced to a new neighbor at Interlochen probably 7 or 8 years ago. And between the time I met him, when he asked me what I did, and then he said, you ever write band music? I said, well, I've wanted to for a while, but I haven't really done it. Right. He followed me back to my cabin, which was about 40 feet. By the time we came back with our six pack or whatever I was getting, he had commissioned a piece for band for me, for his middle school band. Okay. And that it just took off. Then suddenly I had a million people in line that I was writing for. And these folks were, most of them were conductors at Interlochen in the summer in the middle school and elementary band thing. And so they were, you know, getting premiered by these amazing kids. So it really turned me on to things, and I was looking for a publisher. Mm-hmm. And I had some success earlier with my music with small publishers and gotten very disillusioned by the total lack of any publicity or anything marketing wise. It was kind of, you marketed your own and they tried to sell it.
Right.
So I figured, I'd be better off going with failing with the majors than failing with the minors. I happened to be in Kansas at a music store where my wife's family's from one Christmas. I was just browsing scores. You know, they had a big, Sensony Music had a really huge score and band department at that point. I was looking for scores, and one of the salesmen came over and asked me if I was band director. I said, no, I'm composer. Next thing I know, he had given me your name.
Well, I'm certainly glad that he did.
So talk to us a little bit about your process. You said earlier that you don't necessarily compose, you know, physically putting it down on paper or on a computer until you're ready. And when you do, you go. So a lot of composing happens away from the actual physical part of it.
Absolutely. I'm a really terrible pianist. My wife is a brilliant pianist, professional pianist. And so she's always laughing at me. I do sometimes use the piano for sonority. I just feel like the computer makes it too clunky sometimes to do that.
Yes.
So I do like, if I have an idea for harmony in particular, to just find a voicing. Because, you know, especially if you're doing jazz harmony, the voicing is really, really key to, you know, different voicings sound totally different at the same notes. But other than that, I don't try to do it in real time with piano at all. A lot of my career and training, I have been very, probably overly critical in some ways, but very critical of what don't I know how to do. And so I have tried really hard to develop many, many different tools. I had a lesson with Warren Benson once, who has some beautiful band music. Yes. And he made the comment that I've kept with me forever, that being a composer is like playing golf with just a putter. You can kind of do it. You can kind of do it. You know, you can do it, but it's always hard, and it is never going to give you great results except for what a putter is good for. So your idea is that you're developing tools in the toolbox in case you need them, because you don't want to have that moment of inspiration and go, wait a minute, I got a tool in here somewhere I can use to do that. So I'm continuously tinkering, which means I throw away a lot of pieces. Because I'm always trying to say, what is it I don't do well? What do I need to do better? What do I want to do that I haven't done in these pieces? So that, for me, that's the composing thing, is the mental thing of, what do I want to hear? What would that sound like? How long would that be? What happens if I play with phrase lengths? What would a piece with 5-bar phrases sound like? You know, so I mean, I do an awful lot of that sort of stuff just to kind of keep it fresh and keep trying to find different ways of getting at things.
Right.
And I wait, and then when I will know at this point in my life, I've been composing, you know, 50 some years. I will know when I want to write. And I read this once in Copeland's book on music too. He said, he doesn't believe in inspiration. If he feels like composing, he composes. If he didn't, he didn't. And to him, that's what inspiration means. It's time to put it on paper. And I thought, well, that really kind of fits me, what I do.
Yeah.
Too. And I've, you know, so, but if I don't compose, I mean, if I don't compose fairly regularly, I get a little nuts. I get a little restless. So I'm always kind of, I mean, when I say I don't compose a lot, I didn't mean that I don't pull out Finale and like write a brass chorale or something as an idea. And then I look at it later and go, oh, that's just not really very good. And I'll ignore it. And then maybe sometime later I'll think, that sort of sonority might work in this piece. And I'll go listen to it again and go, it's not quite right, but it's kind of close. So I do a lot of that sort of sketching, especially when I'm working on like higher grades, like grade three. I spend huge amounts of time working on melodic things. And sometimes I write pieces out of order. So I don't start at the beginning and go to the end at all. And so I will, you know, I'll sometimes write an opening and go, I don't know what to do with this at all. So I'll just leave it in a file somewhere. And then a year later, I may go back and listen to it and go, yeah, this sort of thing is what I want. I don't want to use this thing, but that's really close to what I'm trying to get at here. And so I do that a lot. So, I mean, I'm always tinkering, but I think compositionally I wouldn't say that I compose every week, but pretty close. And
yeah, it's interesting to hear, as I've done these podcasts, of the different methods that, and what works for each composer is really personal. Oh. And I think that's really cool. You know, because everybody has their own way of approaching it. Now, you mentioned earlier that writer's block is not really something you worry about too much or have very often, because you only sit down to do the physical part of it when you're ready.
I always feel like I don't know enough. I mean, as I get older, I would say when I started, I thought I knew everything, you know.
When we're young, yeah.
By the time I was in high school, I was becoming aware of what I didn't know, both as a trumpet player at that point and other things. And so if I just don't feel like writing, or it's just not going well, you have those times. You start a piece and it's terrible. So you start another piece and it's terrible. You start another piece and then you go, why am I banging my head against this wall? So I'll start looking for pieces, which I think is part of why the websites and things that are available to us is amazing. So I'll go pull a Larry Clark piece, or I'll pull a Sean Laughlin, or I'll pull Carl Strawman, or whoever, John Pasternak, or, you know, some of the young guys in particular are just awesome composers. And so I'll listen to them and go, that is so cool. You know, and I'll look at the score and go, oh, I see what they're doing. That's really clever. And so I just feel like if you got to feed your head sometimes. And I think too many composers are trying to make it out of the air. I think the more you listen to everything, and so I try to listen really widely to a variety of music, just to kind of feed that impulse and stay curious about everything.
Well, that's important, I think, because you have to sort of, we're all, as composers, we're all sort of an amalgamation of what we've listened to and what we've heard and what we like, and you have to kind of refuel that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know,
from time to time as well, for sure. Well, how has your process of composing changed over the years, or has it been pretty much as you've described?
Oh, I think it's continuously changing. I used to be a big piano, sit at the piano. Then I decided that I was too tied to the piano, and I played piano so badly it wasn't helpful. So I decided that I didn't have ear training, that my ear training chops aren't very good. And this is back when I was an undergrad. Started to realize that was really important. So I started working really hard. I went and found a teacher to do nothing but ear training. A friend and I would go and do an hour, split an hour lesson with this kind of amazing person. And that really opened my head up in amazing ways. So I'm always, I would be hard pressed to say there was any commonality. And it's both a fault and a strength of mine that when I've done something, I try to avoid doing it again for a while, the sort of style or things, which means I kind of live in this mortal fear of becoming a formulaic composer, which means that sometimes I outrun my defense. That's the way it goes. So I'm always tinkering. I'm one of those guys, I guess. I used to sketch things visually a lot, and it's something I talk to young composers about a lot. Get a piece of paper, and I imagine the piece. And I've got these things like a wavy line that I add more and more strands to, might be something that starts lyrical and gets bigger and bigger, and then I might have a series of dots and dashes. So I graph out what this piece looks like structurally. And I still do that sometimes just to kind of do it, but I don't use it as much as I used to.
Do you do that on like manuscript paper or just a blank piece of paper?
Yeah, blank piece of paper. And then as I go through, I'll write things underneath it. I'll say brass. I'll say lyrical theme. I'll say intrusion of this music. I'll say quick modulation, you know, whatever feeling I have from it's kind of an interesting process. Then when I start composing, I don't tie myself to it. So I start composing using that, and I'll realize sometimes I'll even in that sketch have times. I'll say this should be about 30 seconds long. This should be about 10. This should be a pause. Then I'll write, you know, dynamics in sometimes. But when I start composing, the piece simply, the material has its own demands, and you have to really be humble in the face of that, I think. And so too often, I always warn composers, when you do this, it's just the way to get started. Once you're into the piece and you go, yeah, this shape isn't going to work with the material I have, either resketch it or just abandon it and let it do what it's good for, which is to get you started with the shape of the whole piece. But I do like to have some sense of, it's important for me to know what sort of piece. Is this going to be an in-your-face piece? Or is this going to be a lyrical piece? Or is it going to be a mix of things? Or, you know, and then pedagogically is important too, since after all, you're trying to write things that are useful to educators. You want it to be as good a piece as you can write, but you would like to have some sort of handle on what are the people going to use this for? What would this be really good for? What I want a piece that's got this recurrent rhythmic pattern. And maybe if you're working with syncopations with young groups, you've got two different syncopated patterns so that they can actually learn the pattern. And then you can say, oh, look, it's just this pattern here. And you rehearse the pattern. And you know, where we're afraid of syncopations with young groups, if you teach them a single syncopation and embed it in the piece, it's kind of a good for instance, as a pedagogical tool. So I look at those things.
Well, what's interesting about your sort of graphing out the piece, at least it gives you a place to start and a place to look forward to, and thinking in terms of a overall arch to a piece, overall form, you know, loosely, at least just get started. Because what I find a lot with younger composers is their piece, they don't know where they're going. Tell us a little bit about how people can get in touch with you if they're interested in more information about your music or commissioning you for a piece or things like that.
Okay. Well, I have a website that I maintain, and that would be it's fairly easy, luckily, Peter Terry Composer. So peterterrycomposer.com. I also have Facebook composer site, which strangely enough is Peter Terry Composer. so that's also easy to find, and there's a lot of synthesis between the two. So I'd say those are the best. I've got a lot of contact information on my website in particular, and you can get a hold of me either way really fairly easily.
Great. I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in finding more about your music and possibilities of commissioning more of your great music in the future. That does it for another episode of From the Composer. I'm Larry Clark from Excelsi Music Publishing. Thank you for listening.